Dana, a former TV presenter and radio host. But to Luca and Darcy, I'm known as...
Mum!
Maybe one day they'll realise I used to be cool. Yeah. Being a mum has been my greatest joy and biggest headache. It's taken me to playgroups and parent gatherings, mainly for cake and coffee, but also to meet parents and swap stories, which reminded me I'm not alone and the things we face are normal. And that's what this podcast, Parents We've Met, is all about.
I was like, hold on, I'm climbing the wrong ladder here. And it was really easy to step away from acting at that point, don't get me wrong. It's something I'm passionate about. But right now, we got three young, beautiful kids, and that's got to be my focus.
I don't think we're meant to do this parent gig alone, and I knew I needed a bit of a coach to help me along the way. And that's where Jenny comes in.
I believe in you, Dana. And I can help too.
I read Jenny's book KFC, which at first I thought was going to be a mean recipe, but instead I found what I was really needing. I needed to know how to be kind, firm, and calm.
Every parent has their own story and their own struggles. So join us as we chat through the magic and mess of this parenting gig.
Ka pai, Jenny. Welcome to Parents We've Met. We've got another dad guest for you this week, and I have to say this chat was thought-provoking in so many ways. Now, some of you might remember Edu Drent as Daniel Potts from New Zealand's favourite soap opera, Shortland Street, or more recently from The Golf and The Offspring. In recent years, Edu has shelved his acting work to spend more time focusing on the tough but wonderful job of parenting alongside his wife Mandy, the chief memory maker of the family. Edu's also a bit of a foodie with a focus on complete wellness, so we took the opportunity to get his advice on how to get our kids to eat their greens. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
No, thanks for having me.
Being a parenting podcast, probably a great place to start would be to dive into what your family looks like. So can you give us sort of ages and stages and who's in your whānau?
Yeah, totally. So we've got three little ones. Bastian is 8 years old. We've got Elliot. She is 6. And then August, our little toddler, she's 2. So she's the wild one in the family. And yeah, Baz is the considered and kind of measured one. And then Elliot, the middle child, is the social butterfly. And then my wife is Mandy. Yeah.
And is she the glue that keeps it all just ticking along?
Yeah, I think like many mums are. But Mandy does a great job of, you know, managing the household and kind of just keeping the fun and the life happening. And when things get too serious, Mandy's always the one that brings she's the memory maker. She is really good at making just wonderful memories for us as a family and always comes up with great ideas and how to do that. So, yeah, but I think we all play our respective roles fairly well, but have a lot of room for improvement as well. So, yeah.
Don't we all? I love that memory maker. That's good. I remember when you and Mandy got married, you guys promised each other a full life with epic adventures.
Now, little did we know.
3 kids. I mean, that's pretty full.
Yeah.
And has it been as epic and has there been as much adventure as what you thought there might be?
Well, I think naturally when you first embark on this journey of, you know, committing a life to another person, you have no idea. Right? You have no clue what's in store. And it may mean one thing and then, you know, a few victories and a couple of hardships later and it means something completely different because you're 2 different people. I love this quote, no man enters the same river twice, right? Either the man has changed or the river has passed. And so I think same thing for us. It's like we are completely different people, but the commitment has been to grow together, to keep adventuring together and to keep kind of living life together in a way that meets both of our needs. And I think through that epic adventure is something completely different. But yeah, we've lived in Melbourne, we've lived in LA, we've lived in Sydney. I've been on this acting journey, we've started a business together, we've got 3 beautiful kids. And so yeah, it's full, it's rich, but it's still evolving and still growing into something new as well. So is it what we imagined? It's completely different. Had a lot more hardship than what I thought, but at the same time, it is a beautiful life and we've got some incredible memories together. So, and you know, we'll keep trying to make those. And I think the other thing is like, you know, we initially wanted 5 kids. So we're like, we're going to have 5 kids. We want a full family. When we're 65, like, you know, around the table. And then we had 1. And we're like, maybe 4. And then we had a second one. We're definitely knocking out at 3, right? So you never know. You kind of have these grand ideas of what life is. And then you experience some stuff and things change. But I think the one thing that we have held on to is this idea of creating epic memories for our kids and the way we live our lives and, you know, the experience we can give them. Yeah.
Has there been, speaking of like full, I think of like 4 night sleeps. Have you had many of those?
Honestly, I don't know. That's probably one thing that led us to stopping at 3 is we breed children that hate sleep. And Baz, he didn't sleep through until he was like 5 and a half. So there's a period in my life where I couldn't open both eyes during the day because he'd get up at like 4:30 and then just be like, and people would be like, put him back to bed. I'm like, have you tried putting a 3-year-old who doesn't want to sleep back to bed? Like, what do you, like, show me this voodoo technique that you have, because I have zero idea how you do that, right? So we very quickly became morning people. I've never slept properly since, but finally getting to a rhythm now with our youngest who's 2 and sleeping through, and but Baz still gets up at 5 a.m. and so I get up at 5 a.m. Yeah.
My little girl, so she's 3, she sleeps through. She's all good. But my 6-year-old, every night he's looking for me for a cuddle. Yeah. Every night.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had a night that I've woken up and his face is like, you know, I can like, oh, like someone's right here.
Isn't that the weirdest thing when they're like, when you're like, I'm sleeping, but I can feel someone staring at me. Oh, there's my child just standing next to my bed staring at me, you know, like, yeah. So, you know, we have a similar kind of thing as well.
Alongside the sleep deprivation, parents have different roles, they get different strengths, stuff like that. Where do you see Mandy? What are her strengths? What does she bring to the parenting table?
I think Mandy, she's an incredibly kind soul and is really good at finding the moment to just be together and to just enjoy what we've got. Yeah, so she's got this real kindness that she approaches parenting with, which I think is really lovely and really beautiful. And then she's also very intentional in how, you know, the way that we celebrate things and the way she plans our kind of, you know, these moments for our kids or for us as a family. Whereas I'm a little bit more reactive and but more kind of like, oh sheesh, we've got the weekend coming up, what are we doing? Yeah, so I think there's a nice combination there. She has a real softness to us and I see that in our kids, and it's a really beautiful quality. Yeah.
I was looking at your socials and speaking of bringing the fun and what Mandy does, and it feels like there's so much partying, like kids' parties.
Yeah.
And you guys are always dressed up. I mean, is that part of, I suppose, a family tradition? Like when you have birthdays, you go big and they're really celebrated?
Yeah. So when we got married, this idea of what are we both bringing to the marriage and what are we packing in our suitcase and what are we leaving behind? One family motto that Mandy has is they know how to celebrate. Her mum's Christmases are like insane. Like you walk into some sort of fairy world or Christmas wonderland every time, right? And so she loves celebrating well. So the birthday party, she makes a big effort. There have been times the previous night at 2 a.m. where I'm like, never again are we doing this. But no, it is really cool, and it's something that she, you know, has to take full credit for, because I can't, because it's all her.
I find ice cream cake, we will never have that in our home again. There is some sort of colouring thing that makes my kids go crazy. It's actually forbidden.
Totally.
Even if we go to a party and there's ice cream cake, I'm like, can you please give my kids the smallest little slice there?
Yeah.
I reckon kids are really good at, with their little fingers, finding pain points in our lives. Mm. You know, things that maybe we haven't totally worked through. We're still working on. What have you learned about yourself through parenting so far?
Well, I think like any pressure in life, it's like a magnifying glass, right? And so you very quickly see the cracks. And I think kids have a way of A, exhausting you and then putting you in pressure moments really quickly where they, to your point, poke your triggers. And so I feel like in general, it's just a constant journey of bringing a mirror up to yourself and making you see who you really are. For example, one thing I'm working on at the moment is just, I love my space in the morning. I love waking up and layering my day with my own kind of morning habits and whatnot. And it's really hard to do that when you got an 8-year-old who wants to hang out as well and, you know, is really interested in your time and your attention. And so for me, it's about actually learning, oh, okay, cool. Why is that so important to me? Like what about my need to like control the start of my day is so important to me that it, not having that almost sets me off in a, you know, a really kind of negative direction, when actually I've got this incredible child who just wants my attention, wants to play. And I've found this like it's an annoyance, but it's actually this beautiful invitation. Firstly, why is it an annoyance? And secondly, what's the other opportunity that exists there?
It's also that you're taking the time to kind of slow down enough, because these things are coming at us fast, the invitations to think, what's that about? Why am I so cross or irritated or whatever? So being curious about what's going on for you actually makes the parenting journey really worthwhile, because you're going to probably, I think children do the best form of pressure for us to grow and the best reason to grow is having kids, because we want to be great for them and we don't want to carry stuff over. So I think it's neat that you're seeing those moments more as invitations rather than hassles to be controlled or dealt with.
Oh, don't get me wrong, I do see them as hassles to be controlled for a fair share amount of the time. But right here, right now, I have
that. Yeah, you can be good about it.
I thought you were going to say, and so I get up at 3 a.m. so I have time for myself.
And that's what used to happen, right? I used to chase myself earlier and earlier until there was a point where I just wasn't functioning.
It's such a balance, though, you know, our time and having time, you know, for friendships and not only being with friends, but growing those friendships and time with our partner, and then also trying to find time alone, time with family. I mean, how do you and Mandy balance trying to find those moments?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The way I view it currently, a mentor of mine used to ask me 6 clarifying questions, right? Who are you? What do you want? Why do you want it? What price are you willing to pay? Then the next one is a one which says, which season are you in? And then the final one is, what does your community say? And these are great questions for any time you're at a crossroads or trying to figure out. But I never quite understood 5, what season are you in? And partly because I was too mature, I wasn't in the space where I kind of had to consider the change of seasons, right? And that's kind of because we were in a fast-moving, forward-moving, like, oh, I was an actor and we're going around the world and it was all a lot of momentum. But with kids, it's made me realize, oh, actually, we're now in a season where the resolution of our life is pretty, like, there's probably 4 pixels. There's family, kids, business, and maybe like social or, you know, some sort of like physical need, right? And so, to answer your question, I think this is a season where we've had to say no to a lot. There's a bunch of things that I'm just not doing because we're just not in a season of having to, you know, having these raging social lives, and it just looks different, you know. So balance for us is going, hey, what's the bare minimum we need in the key areas of life? I love this idea of sharpening the saw. So emotional, mental, physical, spiritual. What do I need at a real base level in those areas to function and to be half sharp, so when I turn up to work or when I turn up with my kids, I can actually, you know, input a little bit and just have really low expectations of what this season of life is. I've got a friend, he's like, oh man, I just want to like go out again with my wife and like go to like a festival. And I'm like, yeah, that's amazing. And one day you will. But right now, as a father of 3, you're like, it's probably going to be pretty hard to, if you hold on to that too dearly, it's probably going to cause a lot of tension in your life. And that's kind of what I've learned, is that we've just needed to lower our expectations of what the season holds.
Yeah. And I think Coachella in our 60s is going to be awesome.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah, it's a Burning Man as a 65-year-old is going to be amazing. You know,
it's coming.
Yeah. But it's taken me a while to get to that, because I've been notorious in my life for saying yes to everything. You know, I love opportunity, love getting involved, hate missing out. So say yes to all of it, you know. Like right now I'm coaching my son's rugby team. Don't really have enough time, nor am I a rugby coach, but I really wanted to get in there and get involved, right? But it does have an effect. So as a result, like, oh, I haven't been going to the gym as much or whatever. Like, it just, you know, so there's always we have finite time. And we do have to make some sacrifices, and that's kind of the season that we're in right now, is one of learning that and actually trying to live that. Yeah.
No, you talked a lot about, you know, being in the full of it and acting and going overseas, and there's been a real shift for you from that life to going back to property. What brought that shift on?
Necessity. Yeah, I'll share a bit of a crossroads story. After I was working in Australia nonstop, went to LA, had 3 years of no work. And then got to this moment where Warner Brothers flew me over to, I was down to the last 4 people for the lead of a show called Titans. It's on Netflix. And essentially it was my kind of like, oh, this is it. This is the moment I've been kind of hoping for and, you know, and believe why I'm here on this planet. And went over to LA, didn't get the role, right? At the stage, we had 2 kids, we're just building our house. Came back, my manager and my agent dropped me in LA. So this last 4 years of investment over there had just kind of turned to nothing. And it made us really question about, okay, what are the things we want? You know, so we asked those questions and we're like, okay, well, things that are really key for us is being involved in a local community, being close to my parents, being close to Mandy's parents so the kids can know them, being part of a local school, having autonomy of my time, of our finances, of the ability to give our kids experiences. And I kind of ran down this list and I thought, man, this contract that I'd signed with Warner Brothers, that would have led me to Vancouver, would have led me to being up there for the next 6 years. We're not in a local school, not in a local community. We're away from my parents, away from Mandy's parents. We don't really have autonomy of time. If I'm called on set for 3 a.m., I'm called on set for 3 a.m. And I was like, hold on, this is like, I'm climbing the wrong ladder here, right? And so this is where I realized actually the need for the season, the necessity for the season is something different. And it was really easy to step away from acting at that point once I realized that. Because suddenly I realized, I can't give my kids any of the things that I want if I continue to climb this ladder. And nor is it the things that Mandy and I want for our family. And so pretty much overnight, we're like, okay, cool. We're just going to pack that up and that's that, right? And so we're not going to chase it in the same way. I still had some commitments here. I'd signed up to a show here that I had to do for a couple of years, and which was really fun. I love acting, don't get me wrong. It's something I'm passionate about. And in another season of my life, I might go back to it. But right now, we got three young, beautiful kids, and that's got to be my focus. Yeah. Mm.
I heard, though, that you're actually really loving what you do now, though, and it's bringing you a lot of joy, the whole property world. And
yeah, totally. Like, I was really fortunate. I studied property and finance at university. But for a long time, I was really scared of giving up acting because it's this thing I had so much identity in. It's like an athlete. If you don't believe you can succeed, what are you doing there, right? So for a long time, it's you believe this idea that the more you're there, the harder you work, and the more committed you are to your dream, that will equal success in the long run. And although I totally believe that in some instances, for other people, I think actually, the season has passed. And so for me, it was realizing actually, if I let this go, there's another beautiful opportunity for me waiting around the corner. That's kind of the journey I went through there.
Do you feel like you've got some acting superpowers now that you can use in your parenting? Like, do you tell a real mean bedtime story? Do you do all the voices and you're like, this is my time, guys, all right?
I have been known to get into the storybooks a bit too much, where the kids are like, what is going on here? I think the acting journey taught me a lot about, you know, various things. And I think, you know, using those at story time has come to help. And
I'm like, I was on TV years ago, guys, you know, like, let me tell you a story. I'm going to do all the voices for you.
yeah.
What about making stories up? Do you ever just create your own?
Yeah, I'm not great at that, if I'm honest. Yeah, Mandy's more that one. She's really kind of creative and, you know, but I'm the one that can provide energy and kind of get into things. And so, yeah, but I'm not the greatest.
Okay. You've listened to the feedback.
Yeah, taken the feedback on board and adjusted.
You've been so intentional about the community you create and what childhood is going to look like for your kids. Mm. Thinking about, you were born in South Africa and spent your first years there. How different is it, these first few years they've had, to how your childhood was?
Oh man, I was telling someone about this yesterday. We immigrated to New Zealand in 96. I was 7 turning 8. I clearly remember prior to that owning a BB gun, buying fireworks, climbing on the roof by myself, like shooting a slug gun. And I was like, there is no chance that I'd let Baz do any of that right now of his own accord, right? And it was kind of wild because I was thinking, we had quite like a visceral experience of childhood. So we went out into like, you know, that little creek behind us in the bush and played and blew things up and hunted things and, you know, and it's very different. But equally, we're benefactors of a generation that probably worked too hard, weren't home enough, you know, and so we now are taking a different approach. And so I think, like, although some experiences that the world has kind of removed from them in the way that we've in some ways simplified or dealt things down a little bit or made things safer, and other experiences where emotionally we're able to understand better what our kids need and what we can provide, you know. So yeah, it's a completely different experience to how I grew up, but it has some positives and some negatives maybe.
Has there been anything very deliberate that you've brought into your own family that came from your own family of origin?
Yeah, I think as immigrants, we are very tight as a family, a lot of empathy. We're very connected, really close relationships. And so I think for us, the way that we celebrate Christmas and Easter, we bring everyone closer in and with hospitality. And we often have my parents or my sister staying and their family and their siblings, their cousins staying, so that we can kind of have some of those moments of celebration. I think some of the other things that my parents taught me, which, you know, is committing to stuff. You say yes to something, you commit to it. So a sport, you see it through. So we try and instill some of those values. Work ethic, what does it look like to commit to stuff and work hard for it? Those are some kind of amazing values that my parents instilled in us. Like spiritual practices that both of our parents, we grew up Dutch Reformed in South Africa, and so we've come a long way since then. But for me, the practice of having faith practices that we commit to weekly as a rhythm in the week is really important. Yeah, so we tried to bring some of that along with us as well. Yeah. Mm.
I know you're really passionate about nutrition and wellness, not just for you, but for the whole whānau. Give me some tips. I mean, I sometimes honestly, like making lunch boxes this morning and I'm like, what can I put in here? It's another Vegemite sandwich because, you know, my kid's half Australian.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you ensure that your kids eat well?
Oh, man, it's a struggle. Like, when our kids are no different. Just because I love it doesn't mean they do.
They love
it. In fact, like, Baz is, yeah. I feel like his circle gets smaller and smaller. We talk about this idea of, you know, like a circle. If you think about circle and you're the dot in the middle and your experiences sit either inside that circle of comfort or outside the circle, like always growing our circle. And that was going really well. We were, like, growing broccoli on the outside of that circle and then, like, you know, whatever. And Elliot just naturally eats. She's like, her snacks would be olives, broccoli, chicken. Like, that's a good day. For Baz, it's like anything white, anything sweet. If it doesn't fit within those two categories, like, good luck. So he's really hard. So honestly, help me. But then our two girls, they are so easy. They just have such a wide palate. And so it's really easy. So unfortunately, Dana, I can't give you any tips, but...
We've lied to the listeners then. We said you're going to tell us how to get them to eat the greens.
Yeah. So right now for greens, we're trying to just make green smoothies. We've settled on that. But also viewing food as not just like a thing of pleasure, but fuel is the one kind of narrative that we're trying to push at the moment. Because I think genuinely for me, that's how I view the world. Like, it's not that I particularly like all the foods that I eat, but I go, oh, this is good for me. And after a while, you can acquire a taste for it. So yeah, we're just trying to run that narrative for a bit and recognizing that like every decision we have in life has a consequence. But yeah, if any of the listeners know, please just send me an email. Yeah,
ages and stages with food. But I do love the concept of, you know, bringing the food out again and doing it with a certain nonchalance. You know, the more you're invested in hoping and really, really wanting them to eat, children do sniff that out. So it's sort of got to be done fairly in a fairly relaxed way, which it sounds like kind of doing that. The lots of exposure. And then I've just noticed my grandson, who's 8 years old, and he loves running, and he's starting to really connect the dots. It's like, I have to fuel my body. So last night we had roast chicken here, and normally it's not into roast chicken, but he knows that kind of protein is good for him. So he's going back for seconds because he's starting to join the dots. So you get these little glimpses of children wanting to fuel their body and wanting to feel good.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a long journey.
Yes. Well, so I'm discovering. But it's interesting you say that because it feels like, there's these levers, right? Like the why, you know, and I feel like for a long time, the lever has just been like taste. Oh, does it taste good or not? And, you know, I think it's interesting what you just said there about understanding the concept of fuel. And so it's, like I said before, narrative we're trying to run. But how would you suggest one, because Baz is playing rugby, right? Baz is probably one of the smaller ones on the field. And so you don't want to, like, I'm trying to not get into, like, if you do this and this will happen, but if you don't do that, Baz, it's really bad. Like, you're going to stay skinny and whatever. How do you connect those dots for them? How do you help connect those dots?
I think when you were talking about modelling, you just talk about how it feels to yourself. You know, when you're eating well, you actually feel good and you feel strong. And when you've had a lot of sugar, you know that you go on a crazy high and you're dropped. So I think we talk to our kids about this without the threat or the, you know, if you don't, this is what you'll turn out into. I don't think we need to use any of those threats. We just... if we can, we stay relaxed about it. And the other thing I say to parents all the time is don't praise your kids for eating. Don't do high fives and, oh, that's so fantastic, you ate it. They kind of, I think, tap into our need for the control. And so I think we reflect back on, you've eaten four of those. How does that feel? And they're starting to connect. Actually, I feel really good.
Cool. Very cool.
I remember... pre-kids walking into a cafe and seeing kids on iPads and things like that, and just being so judgmental, being like, when I have kids, then, you know, that kind of thing. And then I had kids and I got the backpack and I had all the activities and that gave me like 2 minutes, you know, and then it's like, you're all like, so I get it now. Is there anything pre-kids that you were like, my kids are never going to do that, or I'm not going to do that as a dad, that now you find yourself doing?
I don't think we have enough time on this podcast to go through my list, Dana, but you know, it's funny, and that's how you grow, right? Like, this is kind of, I guess, maturity is you have ideas about the world and then you experience stuff and you're like, okay, I probably shouldn't have been so judgmental. But I think, you know, like, let's put it this way, Baz didn't eat sugar until he was like 2.5, right? Elliot maybe 1, August maybe 4 months, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just the way that life works. But yeah, I think, honestly, there are so many instances. TV's another one, you know. So, but I think for us, it's about recognizing, okay, cool. Yeah, so we've shifted, but we still hold dear to some of the ideas that we had initially. So the reason for devices isn't that the device is, you know, evil. It's just that a full reliance on the device as a full-time substitute for needing to parent or needing to entertain or play or whatever, it's probably not the greatest thing. So there's still parameters there, but I think this kind of binary view of the world that I had probably prior to having kids, I think I've just grown up in many ways going, actually, the world can be a lot grayer than what I've made it initially, and that's just the way that life is, and in lots of areas, actually, and so not just in parenting.
I feel like you've genuinely had some really great advice already on the couch, and just even your insights into things. You know, I hadn't thought of it like that, or that's really wise. With friends that are, you know, starting this parenting journey, what is one of your go-to things, your little bit of gold that you give them?
I firstly say you have no idea what's coming for you and I wish you well, right? I think the thing that I've found myself repeating most is, especially as a male, where we often have our at work and we come back home and partake and then we have this, you know, moment of going away to work or whatever, which, you know, Mandy didn't get the chance to do that because she was breastfeeding, she had this baby the whole time. The way I view it is like every day there's two doors, right? There's the door of putting on the mantle of I'm a dad, I enter here, I kind of enter into the hardship and the difficulty, or the door of, like, you know, what I'd say is immaturity or the past, and you go, actually, I'm just going to deny the fact that life's changed. I'm going to try and go out with the boys and I still want to play golf. And that's a daily choice, I reckon, as a new dad, right? So when I talk to my friends, I'm like, oh, so you've got two choices, and sometimes that choice is really hard, but it's a daily decision to actually partake and go, oh no, I'm going to step through this door of a change of season, of the fatherhood mantle that I now need to carry, and I'm going to partake and I'm going to get involved and I'm going to get into like the trenches with my wife and not just run. That's the one piece of advice I often try and give to them is, yeah, consciously make that decision to enter into like the difficulty of the season. Because I don't know about you, but for me, the first 3 months, no one, like, in fact, I often say, like, man, someone should have warned us. I say, like, why didn't you guys tell us? That was just so hard. Because if this, the from 0 to 1 was intense for us. It was a massive change. You know, 1 to 2, not so much, and 2 to 3, not so much. But that first one was just wild. You know, it is hard. Like, it's a big adjustment for people. But when you embrace it, when you go, oh, I'm going to welcome this, I'm going to step into this. For me, that's where, like, life exists. Yeah.
I think from 0 to 1 for me personally, it was a lot of grieving. That things weren't going to plan, you know. Even I think no one told me that breastfeeding was going to be so hard. I thought it was this real natural thing. I was like, man, there was tongue ties and having to go get that sorted. And yeah, it was really hard. Yeah.
I've seen parents over the years who probably have come to a point where they've realized that they didn't, or one of them hasn't actually stepped in and said, yep, we've got kids and my life is going to change. And they're sort of almost dragging something with them. And I think there is a really important decision to make, which is, yep, these are our kids and I'm in. And I know that I'm going to lose some things. I'm going to need to grieve some things. But to carry that weight sometimes of resentment and this isn't what I thought it was going to be and it's much harder than I wanted it to be, or I didn't really want children, is something to really grapple with so that you can sort of put your hand up and say, yep, I'm in. I have seen the outworkings of when maybe a parent has stalled on that, and I think that's a pretty hard place to land. I'm really interested Ido, in what your children, when they eventually leave home, and look, it might be 18, it might be 35, when they decide to leave the family home, but what would you like to see within them when they leave home?
She's just a really good question. I think success would look to me like we have three kids who are confident in the space they occupy in the world, who they are, what they're about, what we believe as a family, what they believe, where they exist. Secondly, three kids that are kind to the people around them, that treat people with dignity, respect, and empathy. And lastly, I think three kids of character, or people of character, who have integrity in the decisions they make, have integrity in the way that they deal with people, deal with themselves, the choices they make. So confidence, kindness, and character, I'd say, are probably the three things that I'd say, yeah.
So good. Jenny here, parenting coach for over 20 years. I feel like I'd be doing you a disfavor if I didn't put the power in your hands for a moment. Anything you'd like to ask Jenny?
Let's see. Well, okay. So one thing that's changing in this season is our middle child, Elliot. She's such a people person, right? Mm. At the moment, something's not quite right at school because she's not liking school. She's not enjoying going. I don't think she has a buddy. And what we've found is, you know, she's often almost quite self-deprecating in a way, potentially to get some attention. So if I say, oh, that was amazing, well done, like, well, how do you feel about that? She's like, I don't like that, or talks it down. But there's something socially not right, or something's not quite happening. And I'm trying to get to like a place where I get her to talk, but she doesn't want to talk. And so you kind of sit with her. So what would your advice be in the situation where you feel like you're in the dark a little bit, you know something's not right? How would you recommend like getting on the inside and getting kind of into her world and understanding what's going on for her?
I love that you just notice that there's something not right. And I think that this can be hard for children because sometimes they're ashamed of their big feelings, that they might feel lonely or sad, or they might feel jealous or cross at somebody. Mm. So I think we're going to a place where when we sit with our children and they share a feeling, even a feeling we disagree with them having, that we are quietly accepting, okay, you feel. When they're bored or disappointed, all of the feelings are acceptable because she's got to sort of step over that threshold of, I can talk about this thing that I'm not comfortable with. And then we have to be very quick not to solve it or say, well, this is what I think you should do at school tomorrow. I think you should. Mm. And we are full of solutions and ways to navigate out of pain. And I think we're actually helping our children accept that there will be struggle and pain, but I will always have someone with me. So if I was to draw a child who might be in a little ditch or who's dipped down into a big feeling, we hop down in there with them. And that sitting there with the feeling is often the beginning of them realizing that I'm okay with this feeling. This feeling will go, or there'll be some solutions. I think we've just got to spend a bit longer than we think in that place. I also might, you know, if we had a longer session, I might look at shame. Some children have an ability to feel shame, and they're often the very sensitive, caring, deep children who sometimes find their way to feeling bad about themselves. And I don't think there's anything that we have parents have done. They just managed to get there themselves. So it's a very unconditional sense of you are loved no matter what. And they just sense that very deeply in their lives.
Very, very cool.
That's a big question. I think we might need to do a follow-on. I catch up with Jenny, you know, for an hour session, and I have, like, on my phone, like, all these notes of next time. Me and Jenny are sitting down. I'm going to ask this, this, and this, and this.
I'm going to make a list, and I'm going to come see you. I think it's great. Yeah. Oh,
so good. Hey, thank you so much for your time and for your honesty. And, I look forward to seeing your kids in the future, these great people of character and just dominating this life that they've got.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
65 Coachella, lock it in.
Come on, Burning Man, two for one, you know.
Okay.
Two or both.
I really enjoyed that chat, and it's actually now got me thinking about my own family and how can I just inject a little bit more fun, and how can I go a little bit bigger for the special occasions. And I don't know about you, but I'm like, can I get an invite to the Christmas? Because I feel like my family's a bit like the Grinch compared to that sort of big Christmas. I love that, being really intentional with memories.
Yeah, I want an invite as well. But I do feel a bit inspired because I think I've grown up with sort of a very family orientated, but very low budget, very measured kind of a Christmas. And I think I've followed suit. And I don't think it would hurt to be a little bit more flamboyant in my intentionality around setting memories. I do know that is what children take away with them. They remember things. They don't so much remember that you perhaps wallpapered their room or, you know, took them to swimming classes, but they tend to remember the memories because the memories are associated with feelings, and the feelings of celebrations are good. And let's face it, when you do good things, I think you cover the stuff you might not do so well, and the times when you've been cross or angry with your kids. So I think that setting memories and planning and being inspired by others is a really good place to go.
I also really loved how Eddie was very intentional and talked about family values. And that's something that I really cherish in our home too. Having on our fridge, this is what's important to us as a family, and getting the kids involved in that. So I think one of the things is, you know, in our family, we're kind with our words.
Kids love a little bit of a focus, and they love knowing that they can be it and do it. So you're sort of calling it out from them to be kind or to be generous or be thoughtful. And then you're able to say, today I really noticed how thoughtful you were when Sammy came around and you shared your cake with him. And it's helping children label themselves, which means they're labeling themselves as kind or thoughtful or generous or honest. And that's a really good building block for self-esteem. So when we're intentional about values, there is actually a lot in it for actually developing a child's sense of self.
I think a good thing to remember, because sometimes we say, oh, you're such a good girl. But actually to say, oh, you're so kind. Oh, that was so brave. Oh. Another great way to bring those values in.
Yeah, and many parents think they don't have them, but I think they sit there, but sometimes they're a bit underground. So I love in coaching me now to say, what are your dreams for your kids? What are your values that you'd like to incorporate into your family? And parents sort of do a bit of a, well, what are they? And then I think they go away and think, yeah, this is what we actually want to do together as a team. We want to bring these into our family.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Parents We've Met. As always, thank you so much for tuning into this podcast project of ours. We are loving putting it together for you. Now, we are all about supporting parents on their parenting journey. So if you'd like access to more resources, head over to our website, parentingplace.nz. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you're enjoying what we're doing here, we'd love if you could share it on social media or rate and review it on this app.